Guys, welcome to The Pulse. Another special show today. It's not often that I come in, well, that's a lie. It is often that I come in and I'm kind of fanboying the folks that we have on the show. But I actually came into the studio today singing because I'm that kind of excited about the two guests we have on The Pulse today from season two of American Idol and so much more, because that's been 20 years. We've got Clay Aiken, we've got Ruben Studdard on The Pulse. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing well.
I'm great. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. So I'm going to tell the people the behind the scenes. I was about to audition for you guys for some Idol singing stuff, and you were encouraging it, and I had to save the listening audience from my voice. So I appreciate you helping me out.
We want everybody to feel like a star. Sir, you are a star. You go ahead. You have your time. We're on your show. I think we should give the fans what they want. I think they absolutely would love to hear you sing.
See that? I agree.
That's a contradiction. You said give them what they want and then said I should sing.
Viewers, you should all tweet in, send in your tweets and your messages online to have him sing for you. I agree. Bill should do it.
All right. Well, I'll do that a little bit later on, and then we can fake mic issues and act like that didn't happen. We'll fix it in editing, as they say. But I appreciate you both spending time with us. So I was talking about the whole concept of it's been 20 years since that season. And so you guys coming back together to do a tour. But has it been 20 years of friends? Have you guys always been this cool since then?
Absolutely. We met during the audition process. And I honestly think that everybody that ended up being a part of like the top 20, we, for some reason, like naturally gravitated to one another. It was weird. Like we all kind of like moved ourselves into kind of like a crew, and we ended up being the ones that made it, the furthest. So, but it has been 20 years, and it's, you know, since 2002, we've all kept up because, you know, before we made it to the top 12, they gave all of us these special telephones. And so that's how we were all able to keep up with one another, because we were the first people to have the AT&T text messaging phones. That's how
long they were fancy. They were fancy too 20 years ago, weren't they, Ruben? They had a tiny little color screen about this big and MIDI ringtones. We were running around downloading the fun, cool songs. But we all traded phone numbers. And he's right. We stuck there. I mean, I hated Ruben for about the first 5 years after he won. But after that, I was fine.
So that is interesting, though, because you guys, cool, kind of bonded, 20 years continuing to do things, but it came down to you too. So even back then, you know, were you cool through that, even as you competed?
Absolutely. Because people aren't privy to the immense amount of work that we have to do to make it that far, like the amount of hours that are put in, like we rarely slept. We rarely had time. Like we would be running and they'd be like, okay, grab a sandwich, let's go. Like it would be all day, every day. And I think when we made it to that point, I think even Clay and I both thought, we're going to get a chance to go home and rest.
We didn't, but we thought we were. I mean, we both were, I think, a little bit ready for it to be over at the end. By the end, because we were kind of worn out, we were excited. We had both been told we were going to get a record deal out of the show. That was even before they announced the winner. And we lived in a house together. We were the only season that lived in a house together. So they really did kind of build it into this very collegial atmosphere. They didn't want drama backstage. It wasn't that type of show, still isn't that type of show. And also, I think the fact that Ruben and I are so different is a good thing. You know, we bonded because we have a lot in common, but we also have enough different. You know, Ruben is the best at what he does, and I think I'm pretty good at what I do, but they aren't necessarily the same. And I don't think either one of us by the end of that show really believed that the winner meant one or the other was going to be better than the other. We just, you know, we had enjoyed and both gotten to be on TV in front of a 40 million person audience. And everything at that point was going to be gravy. And regardless of what happened next for either one of us, we knew that we had a brother and we loved each other and we were going to support each other throughout.
Do you think that's interesting behind the scenes type of information? Because it was just season two. So some of this was still, it was kind of new. Like you didn't know everything that came with all of that and all of the fame and the competition. But you also didn't know that you could not win and still have a huge career.
To be fair to Justin Guarini, at the time that we were on the show, he was pretty big. He had a single out. Like he was just as many places as Kelly Clarkson was, right? Mm-hmm. So when we were on the show, the winner and the runner up definitely had ample amount of opportunity to be just as exposed as the person that won the show. Like it was, we understood the dynamic, you know? So that's why I think that when we got to the end, we was like, woo, all right, well, I'm okay either way. Even though I'm glad I beat him, we were really okay either way.
I mean, I think as humans, maybe we need to do this, I don't know. But psychologically, we feel like we must gauge an individual's success by comparing them to someone. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously Kelly Clarkson is incredibly successful with her talk show and all the stuff that she's done, the hits she's made. But let's not kid, Justin Guarini has done incredibly well for himself 21 years later. He's about to be the star of a brand new Broadway show. He's the lead male in. I mean, he's made plenty of money from his Dr. Pepper Little Sweet commercials. I mean, the fact that Justin Guarini doesn't have his own talk show like Kelly does doesn't mean he hasn't been successful. I mean, a lot of it comes from the fact that each of them were on the show for the same number of episodes. Ruben and I had the opportunity for 16 weeks to come into America's houses twice a week on this TV show and kind of grow up in front of people. We've seen that same type of thing with subsequent seasons. Diana DeGarmo has had a great career, different than Fantasia's, and so on and so forth. So it's the exposure that the show gives that has allowed Ruben and I to still be here 20 years later, 40 million people watching a show 16 weeks of the year. Was this incredible opportunity to have people kind of get to know us. And I think that's what's been the biggest blessing, is that people sort of, I mean, sometimes it's frustrating, right? Because they think they know us. So they sit down at dinner with us. But you know, the fact that they do has allowed us to keep doing this and to be able to celebrate a 20th anniversary that a lot of people don't ever get the blessing to be able to do.
Now, it is, when you talk about that and how much it changed your life and 40 million people, that's still a staggering number of people who watched through that. See, I think it was 100 and some odd million people voted while you guys were there. How much did that change your life? Now, how much did, because you guys were both, you know, from the South, kind of everything I've read, humble, in the church, different backgrounds, but now all of a sudden your household name, like 40 million plus people know you.
I think it definitely took some adjusting, because as we said earlier, when we were on the show, we were very sheltered. Like they didn't allow us the opportunity to go out and really see the impact the show was having in a grand scale. Like I remember, this is an interesting story. I remember going to the mall for the first time with our handlers or whatever, like the people that would take us around, and everybody would be like, hey man, Steve Harvey wants you to call him. And I'm like, what?
even in LA people are like that in LA,
hey man, Steve Harvey needs you to call him. And I'm like, and even after I won the show, I still hadn't talked to Steve Harvey. Like people would be like, man, call Steve Harvey. Well, that was a thing in LA where Steve Harvey would do a call out and whoever saw the celebrity, they would tell that person, like, call Steve Harvey. Well, these people actually had Steve Harvey's number. I didn't. I had no idea what radio station to call. And my first time interviewing him, I was like, man, for the last 5 months, everybody I see in LA has been telling me to call Steve Harvey.
Clay, similar
He's
type
never
experience.
Asked for me to call him, Ruben.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, Clay,
But that's Clay, you had similar.
When you win American Idol, when you win American Idol, you get a trophy, you get a record deal, and you get a call from Steve Harvey. I didn't win, so I didn't get to call it.
But your life changed dramatically too, right? I mean, all of that same exposure applied, you know, even if you didn't want to take Steve Harvey's call.
I mean, listen, it changed both of our lives immediately. And I think, I'm sure Ruben has over the years kind of thought about this too, that most people who come into the spotlight, so to speak, do it somewhat gradually. They put out their first album, they really work and hustle to try to sell it, and hopefully the second album sells more and grows their career. Ruben and I went from being completely nobody in February of 2003 to being, on May 22nd of 2003, arguably the biggest names in American media at that time. And it happened overnight. And it happened, as he mentioned, after being sequestered. You know, we'd go out to the mall to shop for our outfits on the show with that handler, but that was sort of the only out of the house exposure we had. So we've told this story before. Both he and I went to New York right after the show and went to see Rent on Broadway because we had a friend who was in it. And we walked into the theater and they actually had to stop the show to move us because people around us were more interested in trying to get pictures with us or talk to us than they were in watching the show. So they moved us to the balcony and put us in a box so they could put the show back on. It was crazy. And to have that height, and then at other times, you know, then at, you know, it does this throughout your career. There are moments where we both have this big attention when we have an album out. And then there are times when, you know, I've moved on and done different things. So it's been, I would not trade the exposure and the opportunity that we had on Idol for anything. But, you know, it changed everything. And the reality is I remember more of my life post-Idol than I do pre-Idol. Because it's been, you know, it's been 20 years. We were both 24 on the show. I don't remember being 2, 3, and 4. So, or 5, really. So more of my life has been lived post-Idol. It's sort of the new normal at this point.
You speak for yourself, sir.
Well, you have such a brilliant memory.
Jesse Jackson told me when I was a little boy that I am somebody. I have always been somebody, Clay. Talk about we wasn't nobody. Jesse Jackson told me in 83 when I was in kindergarten that I am somebody.
Yeah, that part. I haven't been on Idol and I'm somebody too.
No. Well, listen, I ain't gonna lie to you. I was nobody. Jesse wasn't talking to me.
Well, so you both were somebody, but that's a dramatic change. Like, to everybody kind of know you overnight. So they didn't, now everybody knew you were somebody. Whereas before it was just your family and Jesse, Reverend Jackson, who knew that. And that was going on. Does that create an odd, I don't want to say pressure, like when that many people know you and you're going in places and they're stopping shows because of it, does that create a situation where the rest of your career is judged on kind of an unfair standard? Like, everybody's paying attention and everybody has something to say, or do you just kind of enjoy it and go with it? 20 years of success.
I think that when I was younger, the peaks and valleys were much more, they felt different, right? Because you go from having like a number one record to maybe a top 10 record. And, you know, and people let you know, like, what's going on? Like, you know, Flying Without Wings was number one on all platforms. Like, what's going on? So
platforms, they didn't have a one platform back then.
But you know, what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, like, R&B, pop, every, like, it was. Yeah. But here's the thing, like, what I learned from what I call OGs, the people that I got an opportunity to work with later on, is that it's about longevity. The things that Clay and I are doing now are about expanding the breadth and the width of our careers. Like, our careers were built on great foundations, and we can build those as long as we want to. And they're not always going to be at the highest heights. Like, most people will never in their career get an opportunity to be in the amount of living rooms and households that Clay and I have had the opportunity to be in because of the television show. And if we're always chasing that, we won't be able to look at that, the blessing that's right in front of us. And the blessing that's right in front of us is that we are celebrating a 20th year anniversary. People are buying tickets. The show is going to be amazing. And we are looking forward to seeing all those people that want to relive that nostalgia.
And it's, I mean, it takes a minute to get there, right? I mean, it takes, mm-hmm. I'll admit, it took quite a few years to realize everything that Ruben just said is true. It was far more difficult in my 20s and maybe my early 30s when, yeah, exactly the same as he said. Your next album doesn't go multi-platinum. It only does it once or whatever. I mean, I finally in my 30s realized, wait a second, the very first thing we ever did was viewed by 40 million people. The very first single we put out or album we put out went number one and broke certain records. In the first year of our career, the first time either one of us stepped on a tour stage, remember, Ruben? We mm-hmm. came up on stage in St. Paul, Minnesota, on the Idol Tour, and there were 30,000 people in the arena.
Wow.
We ain't gonna sell 30,000 people on this tour, you know? It's just not the same. But Ruben's spot on right. There are so many reasons to be thankful for that and not long for it again, simply because, like I said before, so few people have the luxury of being able to go back out and do another tour 20 years after their first one. And the show provided that for us. I think trying to, there's a lot of work involved in all of this stuff too, to be around and still be doing this 20 years later. It's not magic. It didn't, the show, the folks who came off of Idol and put in the work and made the smart business decisions to release something at a certain time and whatnot, they're the ones who've stuck around. And, you know, Ruben and I have been lucky enough to be surrounded by people who've helped us do that. But he's right. 20 years later, this show is doing well. We've had demand for it so much that it may end up being, after we put together this leg and the one in the fall and other show, we've had enough people asking for this show to come to their town that it may end up being the longest tour I've ever done. How is that possible 20 years later? I mean, it is a blessing.
You might sell 30,000 because Reverend Jackson said that you are somebody.
So that's right.
You could go ahead.
We need to get him on our marketing team, right?
Go ahead and sell those tickets.
Amen. Hey, y'all don't make no jokes about my first Black History Report subject, just to be clear.
That's encouraging. It's all of our first Black History subject. That's nothing but love. I don't want you to undersell yourself. There's 30,000 seats waiting. You know, you obviously see the chemistry between the two of you, and there's obvious connections. I mean, you're on the show together. You were one and two. But why do you think that you two touring together after 20 years have kind of maintained this camaraderie? Clay, you started off saying you guys are so different, and yet over 20 years, you're coming together, doing this tour, maintaining the friendship. Why?
We're different.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We're different. I'll jump in. Sorry. We're different, but we also have a lot of things in common. I mean, you're right. We're both from the South. We both came into this kind of not knowing what we're getting, but hoping that we took friendships. We both have great mamas who taught us what's important. And we both love our hometown. I keep coming back to that every single time, Ruben. It's the silliest, craziest thing, but we both bonded over our competition over our home states and how much he loves Alabama and how much I know North Carolina is better. And we just really bonded over that for some reason. And I think that friendship and the history that we have together has allowed us to, you know, it's easy. It's a very easy friendship for me. May not be easy.
When I look over all of the friendships that I've had for a very long time, most of them are like extremely similar. Like we argue about the same things. Like I think about my childhood best friend, Kerry, who lives in St. Paul, Minnesota. He and I have always argued about who has the best barbecue or who has the best this in our, like, since kids, we've been doing this. My friend Jason and I, my college best friend, he and I, like, the first argument we ever had was like, is Jim and Nick's or Roger's barbecue better? And we've been friends since our freshman. So that barbecue thing, Clay, like, if you don't like barbecue,
and they are all wrong, unless they're shrewd from on.
Nah, listen. It's something in that Mobile. That Mobile, I never tell Jason to his face, but that, listen, they got
we'll a send some to Bill. We'll send some of yours to Bill, and I'll send some of mine, and we'll let him decide.
Let's do that. All right, cool. Let's do that. That's a plan. You guys sound like brothers. Like, you could see, like, the bonding going back and forth. The friendship just seems really real. That's why I think it'll be a very cool chance to see that coming together again on stage. We've talked a lot about it. What, tell us about the tour. And you're all over the place, and there's a national audience watching this too. But Philly, April 28th, you're coming here. What are we going to see?
What, now we're neither one of us wants to go first? I'm going to let you go, Ruben. We're both afraid to step on the other. Go ahead.
I think everybody's going to have a good time. Listen, we are definitely going to be doing some of the things that we did on American Idol, which was really cool that we got an opportunity to look back at all those videos, which were, there were a lot of videos. We watched a lot of footage and picked out the best songs that we thought each one did from those in particular weeks. We're going to do some of our stuff, my stuff from my album, his stuff from his album, albums. And we have an amazing, we're going to have amazing female vocalists that'll probably help us, you know, go through the decades of music that we're going to be singing through, and that we'll do duets with her. And so it's going to be a great night. Like, the band is smashing. The music is going to be great. Hopefully every night our energy will be at 100 so that the fans can get the same show every single place we go.
You know, I think what's great about this show is the way that, I mean, we knew we were going to do our 20th anniversary show. We knew that we loved how we did our Timeless tour in 2010 and our Christmas show on Broadway in 2018. But we did not admittedly know exactly what this show was going to be until we got together. Ruben and I got together. I went down to Birmingham and we sat with our music director, John, and we just talked and reminisced about the show, about our experience in 2003. And as we were talking about it and telling stories about what Ruben loved and remembered and how he remembered, he remembered the first time we met Lamont Dozier on our first week of the top 12, and he was recounting that, and we both said, oh, let's do those songs we did in Motown, Lamont. I mean, the show came together in this really organic and sort of magical way where it's a reminiscing of 2003 between Ruben and I and tying the music into that. So people are going to come, they're going to have the fun that Ruben talked about, but they're also going to get to hear the stories that we have probably some of them never told about what it was like to choose this song. We'll talk about why I wouldn't sing a James Ingram song on Idol, even though I really wanted to. We'll talk about, I mean, I'm not going to tell you why, you have to come to find out, but those, the whole show and the set lists and everything kind of really came out of Ruben's and my nostalgia for that time. And I think that we're all looking at this time for something to feel safe with, you know, and sometimes reminiscing about times in the past that we loved can fill that void. And I think this show will do that. Anyone who loved the show back in 2003 or watched it or remembers gathering with their family to watch it will find a lot of joy, I think, in this show.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting because we go back to 2003 because it's a 20-year celebration, but you guys have been doing a lot. Like, there's people you've both been on, you know, you've done tours, you've done Broadway, you've done TV, you ran for office. Like, I mean, you guys have been doing a lot in the 20 years since Idol. So people will want to come back and see, like, 20 years ago music, but also 10 years ago and 5 years ago and Broadway and all of that, right? There's a whole bunch that goes in between those 20 years.
Oh, certainly, absolutely. But I can guarantee you no politics.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. That's probably a smart decision. Ruben, you were about to say something?
I said, absolutely. We both had very long and, not very long, but long careers, and we've done a lot of different things, you know, and, you know, hopefully we can bring that experience to the stage in a way that is entertaining and fun for everyone.
Couple of things that we do, and, you know, half an hour goes very quickly, so I appreciate you spending the time with us. But the whole nature of this show is the concept of use your voice for good. We try to get to that in the course of the show. Both of you have been very involved in various charities and advocacy work and what have you. Clay, let's start with you. If there's any of them you want to share with us or any of that information you want to put out, the things that resonate with you in helping people.
Interestingly, I've thought about that a lot over the past year or so, especially because you're right, I did work and take time off from performing for about 10 years to work in more public service political realms. And I sort of discovered something over the last year or so, and my last foray into that, is that, first of all, I don't think politics is helping anybody. And certainly not making anybody happy. And, you know, and Ruben and I talked about this when we were together a few weeks ago, that yes, and I will talk about my organization that includes kids with disabilities into programs recreationally with kids without disabilities. I was a special ed teacher before. But what really occurred to me after the last political experience that I had is that as much as I went into doing political work and public service work in that way to try to help people and improve lives if possible, in some strange, and I hope it doesn't sound egotistical way, I think what we're doing with this tour does more to make people happy than any sort of politics or any sort of government mess ever could. And so I'm glad Ruben talked me into doing this, because I think that our goal here is to use our voices, as you said, for good in trying to kind of spread some happiness, to spread a little bit of nostalgia and some joy to people. And it took me to the age of 40 to figure out that maybe the most impactful thing that I am able to do is sing. Ruben's been doing it for 20 years and making folks happy, and maybe the most impactful way to use my voice is to do just that.
Yeah, I don't think that's egotistical. I think that's facts.
This message was sponsored by the Democrats for Clayton Aiken.
No, it's not. We won't be doing that again. Ruben can be governor of Alabama.
What's it mean to you, Ruben? I started on a tangent real quick. I started to say, and we've never met before, but I started to say, what's that mean to you, Big Rube? And you're not Big Rube, but you're Little Rube.
I'm gonna always be Big Rube, bro. Okay. I am thankful that American Guy Idol gave me the platform to be able to start my foundation, to give young people that grew up like me an opportunity to further their education in music. You know, a lot of times, especially, you know, when I was a kid, I really wanted to go to Morehouse College, I thank God that I got an opportunity to go Alabama A&M and the things that I learned and the people that I met. But when I was in high school, I really wanted to go to Morehouse. And unfortunately, the scholarship that I got, it just didn't meet the needs that I had financially. And, you know, thankfully, we've been able to, like, you know, give kids some scholarships that plan on majoring in music in college. And we, you know, have done our music camp, the Ruben Sutter Music Camp, with the help of my beautiful mother. We've been able to keep doing the Ruben Sutter Music Camp, and it's been great. So that has been like, and you know, one of the interesting story is one of my kids was actually in a Broadway musical across the street from Clay and I when we were doing our play. So that was like extremely rewarding for me to see that the work that, you know, we were doing at our foundation was impacting people and making them reach past themselves and want to, you know, go for that bigger thing. So I'm just, you know, thankful that this life has given me the platform to do that.
I appreciate both of you spending some time with us. This has been fun. Like, I enjoyed this, getting a chance to look back, but also looking forward. I was one of the, 40 million people who was sitting there watching and following your careers. I look forward to having you in Philly April 28th. Thank you so much for what you both do.
Thank you.
Set them chicken cheese steaks out, homie.
I got you. Don't even worry about it.
Where we going? Yeah, Iskabibbles, are we going to hit?
What are you going to hit? What do you know about Iskabibbles?
What are we going to do?
Clay's down there going, what are they talking about? We got you. We're going to put together.
Ruben has a favorite food in every town, I think.
Yeah, well.
He knows. Hey, he is a culinary expert in every city.
Listen, Miss Patty, Mama Patty always made sure when I came to Philly that I had a good cheesesteak. So I'm just saying, like, I have to, you know.
We got you.
Shout out.
We got you. We're going to look out for you. Now, you little Rube, you can have all the cheesesteaks you want. Thank you both for taking time out. We'll be in touch again soon. Continued success.
Thank you so much.
All right, man.
You guys take care. I was going to sing, y'all. Like, I thought about it. I was going to break out in song, and they were going to do the whole Simon Cowell analysis of whether or not I had skills, but I figured I didn't want to start off the show in a way that would make you stop listening. So I spared you that. But thank you for listening to The Pulse podcast today with Ruben Studdard and Clay Aiken. I certainly enjoyed that, hearing all of their stories, all of the things that they had to say. And just the fact that they're still brothers, they're still cool after all of these years doing a fun tour. I hope you enjoyed it. Do me a favor, click the little button that says subscribe so that you can get a notification every time a new show comes out every Monday. And also hit up YouTube, where there's a lot of great episodes that you may not have had the opportunity to see. Do a little search for The Pulse with Bill Anderson. I'm sure you will enjoy many of those shows as well. And if you're ever in Philadelphia, you want to watch the show, we air Mondays on Fox 29. Nationally, we air on Fox Soul. And you can hit me up on social media. Follow me at BillAFox29 on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, BillAndersonFox29 on Facebook. I'm everywhere, and I would love to hear from you. And with that, I leave you, as I always do, with the reminder that whenever you can, please use your voice for good. And have a good one.